He tried his best to cancel me. Instead, he forced millions of people to watch the show. That backfired bigly. He might have to release the Epstein files to distract us from this now.
Go get him, Jimmy. We got your back.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, it is.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. And it is kind of amazing, but unless Donald Trump and his Republicans in Congress decide to come to the negotiating table with Democrats in D.C. very quickly, we are not only about to see a federal government shutdown in less than a week's time, we're going to see health care costs for tens of millions of Americans absolutely skyrocket at the end of this year. And it is all of it, the Republicans doing. This will include not only folks on the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare exchanges, but also those on Medicaid. And yes, unless something is done, even Medicare. I've been following healthcare analyst Charles Gaba for years on social media and elsewhere, and am delighted to get to speak to him momentarily for the very first time in person, well, at least over the radio, about all of this. Also, hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
I heard your giggle.
Yes.
Some special election news that I want to get to in a moment before speaking with Mr. Gaba, but I've got to start here today since I know there's a few million folks who didn't get to see, who weren't allowed to see this on Tuesday night, thanks to major corporate local television station conglomerates like the very right-wing Sinclair Broadcast Group and Nexstar Media Group, which have been allowed to buy up local stations across the country and dictate to them what they are allowed to show to their own viewers. Despite ABC and its parent company Disney restoring Jimmy Kimmel's late night show on Tuesday night following a brief suspension after Trump's FCC chair Brendan Carr threatened to take away broadcast licenses from ABC local affiliates in response to something completely true that Jimmy Kimmel said about supporters of Republican activist Charlie Kirk a week or so ago in the wake of Kirk's horrific murder. Despite ABC and Disney agreeing to restore Jimmy Kimmel's show to the public airwaves, Sinclair and Nexstar have announced that they will not. So, at least for now. Therefore, viewers in dozens of major cities across the country, including many where we air, including New Orleans, Nashville, Knoxville, Salt Lake City, Burlington, Vermont, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, St. Louis, Washington, D.C., and a ton of others, about 40 cities in all, viewers in those cities were not allowed to watch Kimmel on the public airwaves on Tuesday night. So I want to play a little bit of his extraordinary and emotional monologue. If you did see it, I think you may know, it's worth hearing in part again anyway, because in an emotional return to the airwaves on his late night show on Tuesday after nearly a week-long suspension, for some 16 minutes, Kimmel mixed humor and pointed messages. He thanked his many supporters in the industry, and he offered some emotional thoughts about his suspension, Donald Trump and his FCC chair's attack on free speech and the Constitution, the support that he's received from the public, which loudly clapped back against Disney by canceling Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN streaming services in drove in response to all that, and yes, helped get Kimmel back on the air. And by the way, Kimmel praised Charlie Kirk's widow as well. Here's just some of that remarkable, moving, touching, very funny monologue on Tuesday night's Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Now, a lot of people have been asking me if there are conditions for my return to the air, and there is one. Disney has asked me to read the following statement, and I've agreed to do it. Here we go. To reactivate your Disney Plus and Hulu account. Open the Disney Plus app on your smart TV or TV connected device. I've been fortunate to work at a company that has allowed me to do the show the way we want to do it for almost 23 years. I've done almost 4,000 shows on ABC, and over that time, the people who run this network have allowed me to evolve and to stretch the boundaries of what was once traditional for a late night talk show, even when it made them uncomfortable, which I do a lot. Every night, they've defended my right to poke fun at our leaders and to advocate for subjects that I think are important by allowing me to use their platform, and I'm very grateful for that. With that said, I was not happy when they pulled me off the air on Wednesday. I did not agree with that decision, and I told them that, and we had many conversations. I shared my point of view, they shared theirs. We talked it through, and at the end, even though they didn't have to, they really didn't have to. This is a giant company. We have short attention spans, and I am a tiny part of the Disney Corporation. They welcomed me back on the air, and I thank them for that. That unfortunately, and I think unjustly, this puts them at risk. The President of the United States made it very clear he wants to see me and the hundreds of people who work here fired from our jobs. Our leader celebrates Americans losing their livelihoods because he can't take a joke. He was somehow able to squeeze Colbert out of CBS. Then he turned his sights on me, and now he's openly rooting for NBC to fire Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers and the hundreds of Americans who work for their shows who don't make millions of dollars. And I hope that if that happens, or if there's even any hint of that happening, you will be 10 times as loud as you were this week. We have to speak out against this guy because he's not stopping. And it's not just comedy. He's gunning for our journalists, too. He's suing them. He's bullying them. Over the weekend, his foxy friend Pete Hegseth announced a new policy that requires journalists with Pentagon press credentials to sign a pledge promising not to report information that hasn't been explicitly authorized for release. That includes unclassified information. They want to pick and choose what the news is. I know that's not as interesting as muzzling a comedian, but it's so important to have a free press, and it is nuts that we aren't paying more attention to it. Walter Cronkite must be spinning in his grave right now. He's dead, right?
Yeah.
Look, I never imagined I would be in a situation like this. I barely paid attention in school. But one thing I did learn from Lenny Bruce and George Carlin and Howard Stern is that a government threat to silence a comedian the president doesn't like is anti-American. That's anti-American. And I am so glad we have some solidarity on that from the right and the left and from those in the middle like Joe Rogan. Maybe the silver lining from this is we found one thing we can agree on, and maybe we'll even find another one. Maybe we can get a little bit closer together. We do agree on a lot of things. We agree on keeping our children safe from guns, from reproductive rights for women, Social Security, affordable health care, pediatric cancer research. These are all things that most Americans support. Let's stop letting these politicians tell us what they want and tell them what we want. A moment over the weekend, a very beautiful moment. I don't know if you saw this. On Sunday, Erica Kirk forgave the man who shot her husband. She forgave him. That is an example we should follow. If you believe in the teachings of Jesus, as I do, there it was. That's it. A selfless act of grace, forgiveness from a grieving widow. It touched me deeply. And I hope it touches many. And if there's anything we should take from this tragedy to carry forward, I hope it can be that. Not this. So thank you for listening, and I'll have more to say when we come back.
Jimmy Kimmel returning to his late night show, Jimmy Kimmel Live on Tuesday night. Moving, to say the least, and important. So I'm glad we were able to play at least some of that, particularly for our listeners in cities which were not allowed to hear that on Tuesday night, thanks to
mega media consolidation by right-wing corporations.
Yep, in the name of Sinclair and Nexstar. All right, yep. Very quickly, before we get to my guests, some other quick news before we get to the coming Republican government shutdown and the healthcare apocalypse along with it. In what would normally not be considered good news for Democrats, Deborah Shigley lost to her Republican opponent, Jason Dickerson, in a special election for State Senate District 21 in the great swing state of Georgia by 22 points on Tuesday. The Democrat lost that margin, as Pitt Griffin, who writes at Daily Kos under the name The Critical Mind, is actually, quote, good news for people who believe in America as a free and democratic country. Why is this good news? He asks rhetorically. In the regular election, just shy of a year ago, the Republican won this seat by over 40 points. Shigley, the Democrat, lost it on Tuesday, but just by 22 points. That's an 18-point swing toward Democrats in a very Republican district in the swing state of Georgia. Observes Griffin, imagine that change in the vote nationally. In more good news for Democrats, he adds, Georgia State Senate District 21 is not an outlier. Tuesday's results continue a positive electoral streak for Democrats. The party has narrowed GOP margins in bright red congressional seats, easily won seats that were supposed to be tight elections. They have flipped previously GOP seats, and they've widened margins in Democratic precincts since Trump's return to office this year. The DNC may not be popular, he argues, but Democratic candidates have a message that voters want. Well, apparently so, because over in Arizona, in a special election on Tuesday to fill the seat of progressive Democratic Congressman Raul Grijalva, who passed away earlier this year, his daughter, Adelita Grijalva, won her U.S. House special election against the same Republican candidate that her father, Raul, defeated last November. Raul Grijalva, the popular 12-term congressman, won re-election last November by 26 points in his district. His daughter, on Tuesday, however, won the seat by 39 points. With almost 90% of the vote in as of airtime today. That's a 13-point swing toward Democrats since last November in the swing state of Arizona in a congressional district that reaches from Phoenix to Tucson. Now, if we measure how the Democrat did on Tuesday night compared to the presidential results in that same House district last year, it would be a 16-point swing toward the Democrat since the 2024 election. So whether they ultimately win or lose in specific races, Democrats are seemingly seeing a huge swing in their favor among the electorate, at least in special elections, all over the country this year. If that happens in next year's midterm elections, there's no amount of gerrymandering that Republicans can do between now and then to avoid an absolute rout at the polls, and the majority won back by Democrats in the House, maybe even in the U.S. Senate. For now, however, Grijalva's victory on Tuesday in Arizona's 7th congressional district means that Republicans' majority is narrowed to 219 to 214 as Congress faces some key upcoming moments, including a shutdown over health care battle over the next week, as we'll discuss with my guest in a moment, and an effort by House Democrats to force a vote on the disclosure of files related to, yes, Donald Trump's close personal friend for 15 years, the late convicted sex trafficker and pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Adelita Grijalva will join the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which her father co-chaired from 2009 to 2019. In addition to Grijalva's victory, giving Democrats another vote in the tightly divided House, her win comes amid an effort spearheaded by Republican Congressman Tom Massie of Kentucky and Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna of California to force a vote to compel the Justice Department to release its files on the investigation into Jeffrey Epstein, in which Donald Trump is said to have been named multiple times, which perhaps is why he is trying to block its release after promising to release those files in order to get elected. The so-called discharge petition that Speaker Mike Johnson has been trying to prevent from coming to the floor is just one signature shy of the 218 needed to force a floor vote on the issue. All 213 House Democrats and four Republicans have already signed on, putting us at 217. And yes, Grijalva's victory on Tuesday will now push the petition over the threshold, as she has vowed to sign it as one of her first official acts upon being sworn in. So little wonder that Speaker Mike Johnson has told Republicans not to show up to work at all next week, even though the government will otherwise shut down entirely as of Wednesday if Republicans continue to refuse to negotiate a budget bill before the new fiscal year, which begins on Wednesday, October 1. And on that, Democrats say they will not just go along to get along unless Republicans agree to extend expiring funding to help tens of millions of Americans who are about to see their health care costs go through the roof, unless Republicans do the right thing. And how often does that happen? We will discuss all of that and what it will mean to you and me and millions of other Americans, Democratic, Republican, and everything else, straight ahead with healthcare data analyst Charles Gaba right here on The Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Give me the news. I got a bad case loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case loving you.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Yeah, Americans, a lot of them may have a bad case of loving their doctor. They may not be able to keep that doctor for much longer if we proceed along the lines we seem to be going, as the October 1 deadline for Congress to pass the spending bill quickly approaches. Republican lawmakers have been sort of left stunned after learning of how Democratic lawmakers plan, for now anyway, to hold firm and refuse to cooperate with a GOP budget proposal to essentially, well, kick the budget can down the road. Where a spending bill not to be adopted by the beginning of fiscal year 2026, which kicks off October 1, less than a week from today, the government would be unable to function and be forced to at least partially shut down. In recent years, such standoffs typically see Democrats pushing for what's known as a continuing resolution, or CR in Capitol Hill insider speak, a temporary stopgap funding bill that basically continues spending at existing levels for several weeks, giving Congress more time to hash out a more long-term spending bill for the next fiscal year. This time, however, it's Republicans who are pushing for a so-called clean CR and Democrats demanding budget concessions, catching many Republican lawmakers off guard. Quote, "My brain's falling out of my head," said Congressman Rich McCormick, Republican of Georgia, speaking with Politico in a report published Monday. He said, quote, "When you talk about the Freedom Caucus talking about passing a clean CR and the Democrats saying, I'm going to shut down the government, I've never seen anything so weird in my life," he said. Yeah, well, welcome to 2025, Congressman, with everything upside down. Then again, in the past, when Republicans refused to back a clean CR until a full budget could be worked out, it was because they were insisting on something that has nothing to do with the budget, like banning abortion or ending Obamacare, as Senator Ted Cruz tried to do when he caused the government shutdown back in 2013, or to force Congress to allocate hundreds of billions of dollars for a new border wall back in 2018 when Trump shut down the government for more than a month before eventually caving. This time, however, it's Democrats trying to save health care for millions of Americans. Millions of Americans who currently have it, but soon may not, or soon by the end of the year, will have to pay a whole lot more for it if they want to keep it. Essentially, the hill the Democrats are choosing to die on here is how to permanently shore up the enhanced premium subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, with existing subsidies for tens of millions of Americans set to expire at the end of this year. The millions of Americans who have access to health care now via those ACA exchanges will see their monthly premiums skyrocket as of January 1, according to experts, unless the enhanced subsidies are restored, either permanently or at least for a period of time. That is the issue the Democrats now seem willing to allow the government to shut down over in a week's time, particularly as Republicans are seemingly refusing to negotiate at all on any of this. The issue has actually divided the GOP, with many Republican lawmakers admitting that failing to extend funding for the ACA could become a major political liability for them in the upcoming midterm elections. As we discussed on this program with the American Prospect's David Dayan a few weeks back, this should be something that Republicans want to do on their own. Arguably, Democrats should be demanding much more in any new budget agreement, like the end of Trump's racist, violent ICE roundups, an end to his law-breaking, an agreement that whatever spending Congress ultimately agrees to, which must receive help from Democrats to get the 60 votes needed to overcome a filibuster in the U.S. Senate, will not simply be rescinded by Donald Trump or by Congress in a simple up or down majority vote, as happened earlier this year. It is this wedge between Republicans that Democrats are now hoping to exploit under the threat of a government shutdown, while at the same time laying blame on the Trump administration and the GOP in the process, since they simply refuse to negotiate a solution. But as Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, told Politico, quote, "I know the president may not want to acknowledge checks and balances, but he can't do this with Republican-only votes." This week, Democratic lawmakers had planned to meet with Trump to negotiate these matters, but on Tuesday, Trump abruptly canceled this week's planned meeting, refusing to negotiate over Democratic demands to shore up health care funding to prevent a potential looming federal government shutdown. Now, AP does a bit of sane washing for Donald Trump in their coverage today, reporting, quote, "In a lengthy Tuesday social media post, Trump rejected the sit-down that the White House had agreed to a day before. It would have been the first time the Republicans met with the Democratic Party's leaders, Hakeem Jeffries and Senator Chuck Schumer, since his return to the White House." Quote, I have decided that no meeting with their congressional leaders could possibly be productive, Trump wrote in the Post. The president complained that the Democrats, quote, are threatening to shut down the government of the United States, unquote, unless Republicans agree to more funding for health care for various groups of people Trump has criticized. Trump did not close the door on a future sit down with Democrats, but he warned of a, quote, long and brutal slog ahead unless Democrats dropped their demands to salvage health care funds. Now, I call that sane washing because it sounds almost like a reasonable-ish disagreement between the parties, but it completely fails to inform Americans how insane Trump's rambling, single paragraph, 450-word social media post actually was. I won't torture you here with the whole thing, but a few sentences just to give you an idea of how the corporate media sane washes our insane president when reporting on him. What he actually said in the post was, quote, after reviewing the details of the unserious and ridiculous demands made by the minority radical left Democrats in return for their votes to keep our thriving country open, I have decided that no meeting with their congressional leaders could possibly be productive. They are threatening to shut down the government of the United States unless they can have over $1 trillion in new spending to continue free health care for illegal aliens, force taxpayers to fund transgender surgery for minors, have dead people on the Medicaid rolls, allow illegal aliens to steal billions of dollars in American taxpayer benefits, try to force our country to again open our borders to criminals and to the world, allow men to play in women's sports, and essentially create transgender operations for everybody. These radical left views and policies is what allowed me to win the presidential election, including all seven swing states and the popular vote in an historic landslide. There are consequences to losing elections based on their letter to me. The Democrats haven't figured that out. They are trying to eliminate the popular $50 billion rural and vulnerable hospital fund, which was passed only by Republican votes and proudly signed into law by me. It goes on and on like that. The crazy. Before he finally concludes, quote, to the leaders of the Democratic Party, the ball is in your court. I look forward to meeting with you when you become realistic about the things that our country stands for. Do the right thing. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. But as Trump, as AP sort of summarized that entire thing, well, Trump said, quote, I've decided that no meeting with their congressional leaders could possibly be productive. Yes, that is how they make the guy sound almost sane, sane washing. It's difficult to not do, to be honest, given the need to report actual sane news about an actually insane president. Anyway, in response to Trump's post, AP notes the two Democratic congressional leaders accused him of throwing a tantrum and running away from the situation. Hakeem Jeffries says Trump always chickens out. Chuck Schumer said Trump, quote, is running away from the negotiating table before he even gets here, which is true. It is odd that the self-declared great negotiator is refusing to even sit down with the Democratic legislative opponents with so much at stake just days away. This is, after all, a guy who was willing to meet with North Korea's Kim Jong-un without preconditions under the premise that it's important to have an open relationship with your supposed adversaries. Not afraid of Kim Jong-un, but plenty afraid, it seems, of Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. Schumer and Jeffries had been demanding this meeting with Trump to work out a compromise over health care funds, and earlier Tuesday had welcomed plans for this week's meeting until Trump canceled it. Trump has further instructed GOP leaders on Capitol Hill not to negotiate with Democrats at all. In fact, GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson is apparently sending members home, instructing Republicans to not come back to Washington next week in the final 2 days before the government will otherwise shut down without some sort of agreement by Republicans to keep it open, as Democratic House Leader Hakeem Jeffries explained to the Midas Touch Network yesterday.
You know, how do you negotiate with crazy is the fundamental question. But we were prepared to go into that White House meeting anytime, any place, because of the importance of defending the health care of the American people. However, here's what, you know, is clear. Example after example after example, telling the American people that we are going to shut the government down unless everyone is willing to continue this process of gutting the healthcare of the American people. Is unacceptable. The government is scheduled to shut down on October 1st. The House was scheduled to vote and be present in Washington, D.C. on Monday, September 29th, and Tuesday, September 30th, in advance of the government possibly shutting down. And Mike Johnson has said, stay at home. That's ridiculous. So Democrats are coming back to Washington. We will be there, ready, willing, and able to do the people's business next week, regardless of whether the Republicans are in town or not.
So it's all amusing enough, except for the fact that at the end of this year, tens of millions of Americans are going to see their health care costs suddenly skyrocket thanks to Trump, congressional Republicans, and the unwillingness of both of them seemingly to give a damn at this point. Republicans for years have been hoping to kill Obamacare, but now millions of their own constituents are relying on it. Back in 2013, just after signups for the Democrats' landmark health care program got underway in earnest and Americans began signing up for the health care via the new federal exchanges in droves, but when neither the federal government nor the mainstream media were providing consistent, reliable reporting on enrollment data, private citizen Charles Gaba, in the tradition of great American citizen journalism, launched acasignups.net. It began as a hobby, relied on crowdsourcing to track enrollments to the new program in real time. But as I can tell you firsthand happened, such hobbies later become full-time jobs. Gaba would go on to expand his data collection and analysis to include the ACA's Medicaid expansion and more, including annual premium rate changes, a variety of other ACA-related policies and analyses of the U.S. healthcare system as a whole. By 2020, that would include data collection on things like the spread of coronavirus and eventually the uptake of the COVID vaccine. We've been relying on data collection and analysis by Charles Gaba, who also writes under the name Brain Wrap over at the Progressive Daily Kos, for years now. So have many major media outlets across the ideological spectrum, which have been citing his work as a critical resource ever since. Gaba has since gone on to serve stints as a healthcare data consultant for the Center for American Progress, as well as sit on the board of directors for Doctors of America. Charles Gaba joins us now. Welcome to the broadcast, sir. Honored to have you here with us to make sense of this moment and what it is likely to mean for tens, if not hundreds, of millions of Americans.
Well, thank you for having me. Honored to be here. And you did a great job of summing up a whole lot of crazy in just a few minutes.
It is a whole lot of crazy. Let me start here, Charles. The immediate stakes. If Republicans continue to refuse to negotiate with Democrats to find a solution to keep the government open, you have been painstakingly tracking in recent weeks, state by state, what Americans who rely on the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare exchanges will have to look forward to by year's end if these subsidies for the ACA are allowed to expire. They were enacted by Democrats just after Joe Biden took office in 2021. If those are allowed to expire at the end of the year, in very general terms, what can some 30 million Americans expect when it comes to their basic health care costs, like monthly premiums, without a deal in Congress before then?
Basically, in many cases, they're kind of screwed. if you want me to sum it up as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
And I should preface this by saying I am one of those. It's more around like around 26 million, give or take. But mm-hmm. I am one of those, along with my wife and son. My wife and I are both self-employed. And so we are both, the three of us are on an ACA exchange plan ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we are receiving, some level of subsidies. And if they are not extended, or hopefully made permanent, but extended at least, for a while, then starting January 1st, if we were to stay in the same policy that we are today, by my rough calculations, as far as I can tell, we'd be looking at around an $11,000 increase in our premiums next year.
What?
That's not two $11,000. That's on top of what we're already paying. So
wow, and but those numbers, I mean, in general terms, I've seen premium costs are going to rise by like 75% across the board. Is that a general number that people could expect?
Well, yeah, the 75% figure, that's based on a KFF, which is like one of the most prestigious and respected, nonpartisan healthcare data collection and analysis think tanks out there. They released that a few months ago. That's their estimate of the average net rate increase for the average ACA, across the 24, 25 million enrollees that they'd be looking at. However, there's some important caveats to that. The biggest one being that 75% average was based on a previous formula that has been used under the Biden administration up until now, but which the Trump administration is changing. So this is completely separate from the enhanced subsidies potentially expiring. On top of that, the Trump administration is changing the underlying formula to make it less generous as well, which means even those who are still receiving the prior, the less generous subsidies, mm-hmm. that's going to be even less generous than that. And so I don't know exactly what the updated version is going to be. They're working on that, I know. I'm expecting that the average is probably going to be more like 90-95% increases on average when that comes out. So
wow.
But the second thing,
yeah.
The second big caveat is, again, that's an average.
Uh-huh.
So that means there's some people who it might quote unquote only go up, 20% or 30% or 40%, but there are also going to be other households that are going to see their net premiums increase 200%, 300. There are some extreme examples at the outside where in theory they could be looking at like a 500 going up like five or six times what they're paying now, which of course nobody could possibly afford. And so therefore what's going to happen is a lot of people who are at the more extreme ends are just going to have to drop their coverage entirely.
And all of that, I'm just sort of, I've got the wind knocked out of me here with some of those numbers, Charles, because on top of that, general healthcare costs for everyone, as I understand it, not just ACA folks, but general healthcare costs are about to rise as well on top of this in 2026, even if there is an extension of the ACA premium subsidies. Am I correct about that?
Well, yeah, because there's, you got to remember there's other factors going on as well. Like, for example, the tariffs, the Trump tariffs are causing a lot of pharmaceuticals, medical equipment, basically anything that relies on any product or component or ingredient or whatever that is manufactured or assembled or what have you overseas, the tariffs are causing those costs to increase as well. And then there's general inflation, of course. Every year there's always going to be a little bit of a bump, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a variety of other factors which have nothing to do with this, or which are only semi-related, mm-hmm. that are going into effect. And there's also, as I mentioned, besides the subsidies, the enhanced subsidies potentially expiring, there's these other changes to the, I mentioned the underlying formula. That change was made by CMS, by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services under Dr. Oz and RFK mm. Jr.
Mm.
That change, there's about a dozen or so other changes, administrative or regulatory changes that they made, which are going to damage and hurt and increase costs and such. Some of those have been struck down at least temporarily by a federal judge. About half of them have been struck down or had a hold put on them. The others are still going through, and so we'll see what happens with those. But yeah, there's a lot of other things like that are also going to affect. This change to the underlying formula I mentioned about the subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that making the premiums go up, that change also is going to increase the maximum out-of-pocket cost for ACA enrollees. So for example, that's the maximum, the ceiling on your deductibles, copays, coinsurance, your non-premium expenses.
Mm-hmm.
The ACA includes a formula that says that you can only you only have to pay up to a maximum amount of that.
Right.
And then if anything over that has to be paid for by the insurance company, well, that does go up every year, but it's going to go up even more this next year because of this other change. So, there's a lot of things like that.
And so essentially what the Democrats are trying to do is say, look, let's continue those expanded subsidies to at least hold down those premium costs for millions of Americans and some of these other costs that are going to go up with it. Because even if they do that, we're going to see increases in healthcare costs anyway, as you say, because of the tariffs and so forth. Now, I realize a lot of folks are sort of looking at the deadlines here of a government shutdown on October 1, the beginning of the fiscal year, and then the expiration of these enhanced premium subsidies for Obamacare customers by year end. But Republicans seem to be sort of sanguine about both of those dates. Here's Senate Majority Leader John Thune telling CNN's Dana Bash on Wednesday that there's plenty of time to figure all of this out if we just, keep the government open until November 23rd under the GOP's plan to adopt a continuing resolution. Until then, without any changes to spending. Let me play this, and I got a question for you about it.
Like I said, this is a program that needs reform, but I think everybody is willing to sit down and talk about how to make that happen in a context where it should be discussed, not as a hostage to keep the government open. I mean, right now,
well,
as I said, we have a bill sitting
on the
desk
meantime
in the Senate that could keep the government open. Well, I mean, I think people aren't going to lose their benefits. Is that this expires at the end of the calendar year. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about here is a 7-week continuing resolution to fund the government till November the 21st. And I assume in that time period, there'll be plenty of opportunities for us to negotiate and discuss what the future of the premium tax credit program looks like.
So John Thune may be willing to push this to November 23rd in advance of the end of the year and the expiration of these enhanced subsidies for ACA enrollees. But Charles Gay, but don't open signups for the ACA exchanges actually begin far before that on November 1, I think? And don't the healthcare providers on those exchanges need to know what these subsidies are when setting prices for those exchanges beginning on November 1?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, I would not want to be an actuary working for a health insurance company right now, because I'm sure they're going through, Pepto-Bismol and Tums by the bottle full right now. Because this is what people have to understand is, so the insurance companies, they actually started crunching their numbers. They got all this data, and they get their actuaries to start plugging in spreadsheets and doing calculations and stuff. They started doing that back in March, like March and April of this year.
Right.
And it's not something that's done within a few days. This is a multi-month process where they have to crunch all these numbers and figure out what are we going to offer and how much are we going to raise prices on this plan and that plan. And
right.
are we going to keep offering plans in this state or that county and so on and so forth. And then they put together their preliminary requests to the state insurance, regulators, uh-huh. insurance commissioners, and they say, okay, here's, we think that this is what we're going to be looking at. And so then there's this like back and forth negotiation process where the state regulators are supposed to pore over all the numbers themselves and, check and see whether or not they're trying to price gouge, is this a reasonable increase? Is what they say that they think that their costs are going to go up or the claims are going to go up, does that seem reasonable? Yes, no. And so they'll make changes, and it goes back and forth. And that happens every year. But there are drop dead, there are deadlines where these things have to be locked in.
Right.
And the final contract, the final rates are supposed to be locked in, and then the final contracts are actually signed, usually sometime in mid-September. And once that's locked in, written in stone or whatever, that's where like those rates are locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, you start marketing them and you update the, they update healthcare.gov and the state exchange websites mm-hmm. and all the promotional materials and all that. And then that's what people pay or that's what they're charged. So
what could Thune possibly be thinking? Let's just keep it open until November 23rd and we'll figure all of this out before the end of the year. I mean, this has got to be done literally yesterday. I don't. am I missing something here, Charles?
Well, CMS did issue a bulletin a few weeks ago, basically bumping out, you know, offering later extension, you know, later deadlines. They're pushing them out as far as they can, basically until September 30th, you know, until literally the last minute.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't actually about these subsidies. That was officially about this court ruling I mentioned, where you know, with the carriers had been assuming that all of these regulatory changes were going through, and then a judge said, nope, sorry, you know, those are unconstitutional. So now they have to go back and make changes. So that's on top of all this. So there's a lot of chaos going on. But yeah, at a certain point, they do have to have it locked in. And the other thing to remember is that the carriers are legally required to notify all of their, you know, 22, 23 million existing enrollees. You know, they have to send out letters right, telling them, you know, dear, you know, so-and-so, here's your current plan. Here's what it's costing you this year. Here's what it's going to what we estimate it's going to cost you next year. And you know, based on what the changes are and such. So those all go out. In fact, some of them have been doing it early. Some of them, I believe they're mostly going out in early October. Basically, after the contracts are locked and everything's official, then they have to send out. I think it has to go out like 30 days before open enrollment, which, you know, November 1st, so that'll be early mm-hmm. October. Mm-hmm. And so there are millions of letters, notification letters that are, you know, have to go out letting people know what they're going to be expected to pay next year. And I mean, some of the state exchanges have actually already been setting out early notices to their enrollees,
right,
letting like Penny in Pennsylvania and, you know, Covered California, letting them know, hey, heads up, your premiums are probably going to go up quite a bit next year. You know, they can't tell you exactly right, how much, uh-huh, but they at least give them sort of a heads up to, you know, early warning sign.
So this is, I mean, I know there's a lot going on, mm-hmm, but this seems to be a potential earthquake in many different ways, political earthquake, healthcare earthquake that is sort of looming just days, if not months away, it's kind of amazing that it's not getting more coverage, that it hasn't gotten more coverage up until now. Should Democrats here, is this a hill worth dying on, as you see, for the Democrats? Should they let the, you know, Congress shut down? I mean, it seems to me, I know that Republicans were talking about a temporary extension, maybe a year until after next year's elections or something. It seems to me that I know Democrats would like to see these enhanced subsidies made permanent. It seems to me that that would also be in the best interest of Republicans themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, on the surface, I mean, that's why about a dozen Republican House members introduced a bill to do just that, to just bump it out by, okay, tack one more year onto it. It has nothing whatsoever to do with actually giving a damn about the enrollees. It's about getting over the hump. It's about getting over, you know, past the midterms,
right?
Because if they actually care, then they would make it permanent, you know. But no, they want to bump it out past the midterms, which, you know, would by you know, conveniently would be you know, just after November 2026.
Right, but it would send us into next year's midterms with a whole bunch of Americans knowing their healthcare is about to go up if Republicans hold control.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that it would still be that one year extension would still be damaged to them as well, because there would be all this panic about it. Right?
Right.
There'd be all the notice would be going out. There'd be all this panic, and the notice would be going out just before, you know, election day, right?
Right.
Just,
right.
A few weeks before. But at the same time, there's still a big difference between. So in that sense, a two-year extension would actually almost be more beneficial to Republicans
right,
than a one-year would, because it would push it completely past. But that's the thing, is that there's still a big difference between getting a letter in the mail saying, hey, your rates are going to go up, are going to skyrocket, and actually getting the invoice, you know,
right,
actually getting a bill. There's a difference between a notice
yeah,
and a bill,
yeah,
you know, payment due. And as we've, you know, I mean, I hate to say this, but as we kind of learned last a year ago, There is a big difference between me and I presume you and many others screaming with a megaphone from the rooftops. Mm. For the love of God, do not put him back into office.
Right.
Or terrible, terrible things will happen. You know, he's literally said, I am going to be a dictator. He's literally said, I am your retribution. You know, like basically, there's a bit, you know, you can scream it all you want. There's a big difference between warning people as loudly as you can and them actually experiencing it.
Right.
And I, you know, believe me, I do not want to have to shell out another 11 grand next year. I can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, what we're going to have to do, and you know, in our cases, we're going to have to downgrade to a worse plan if that happens. You know, and mm-hmm. with higher deductibles and higher out of pocket and all that. We're actually in a having said that, we're actually in a relatively good position. That is, yes, that would hurt us badly, but mm-hmm. like there's going to be a lot of people where it's going to hurt them a lot worse.
Right.
You know, I don't want that. I really don't. But at the same time, if this was normal times, if there was a normal Republican Party, normal situation, you didn't have, you know, a crazy dictator, you know, want to be in charge of everything. You didn't have Elon Musk and Doge running around, you know, ripping plugs out of the wall left and right. Then, you know, then in a situation like that, I could see, we'll agree to bump it out by another, you know, couple of years, you know, kick the ball down the road. Because, I mean, that's happened in the past with, like, CHIP funding, you know, for mm-hmm. the Children's Health Insurance Program. That would usually be funded for, like, 5 years at a time. You know, they would kick it down. Same thing with, like, healthcare provider reimbursement rates for mm-hmm. Medicare, things like that, where they bump it out a few years here, a few years there, make it somebody else, another administration's problem, you know, a few years later. Under normal circumstances, I could sort of see that, but with all this insanity going on, and as you mentioned, even if you're not even talking about ICE and concentration camps and, you know, all these other horrible things that are going on, even if you limit it strictly to actual healthcare policy, as you mentioned, if they agree to a 1 year extension, and then the next day, once it's been, you know, the CR has been passed, Trump just, you know, decides, well, I'm just not going to pay it.
Right.
You know, rescission.
Yeah.
You have to have guarantees that it's actually, that even that minimal concession is actually going to be held to. And we've gotten proof. There's zero evidence. There's zero reason to believe, you know, there's no confidence whatsoever that Trump isn't going to just ignore it or blow it off anyway. So in this case, I don't think this is the only issue that they should be willing to die on. And unfortunately, they're not, as far as I can tell. I saw the last week, the Patty Murray and Rosa DeLauro, they introduced the Democrats, you know, bicameral response, you know, CR. Mm-hmm. And it included a whole mess of stuff, including repealing the draconian Medicaid cuts, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It was a long list, a couple hundred different items. But it also, in addition to all the healthcare stuff, it also included several provisions, which, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how much teeth these have,
mm-hmm.
but basically there were about a dozen or so provisions that basically are, in theory, would require Trump to actually, you know, basically pulling the power of the purse back to Congress and forcing him to actually spend the money allocated and what it's supposed to be allocated for him not to spend money that, you know, on stuff that he's not supposed to spend it on, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. I don't know, you know, legal teeth wise, I don't know how that works, but supposedly it includes that. So if you pair that, if you pair actually reigning in his reign of terror with legitimate policy, you know, important policy changes and such, then yes, I think that it is. And I've been rooting for, I've been telling them very publicly. I said, like, I'm the guy who's been screaming for a year now about these subsidies expiring and how horrible it'll be.
Yep.
And I'm that guy, and I'm the one telling you, do not accept a 1 year, you know, or even a 2 year bump out. Make them permanent. Now, within the details, within the minutia of what the formula is, there is a little bit of wiggle room in there. You know, if they mm-hmm. if they want to tweak the exact percentages here and there, up or down a little bit, I could see, you know, there being some room for negotiation if you have an honest negotiating partner, which of course, you know, clearly they don't.
We don't.
But no, make it permanent. The overall structure should be made permanent. And Trump has to be actually, you know, reined in and forced to actually, you know, do what the bill says that he has to do.
Well, Charles Gaba, we will have you back, I hope, amid the long, difficult shutdown that is, I suspect, right around the corner. As we see who has this right, who has their negotiating strategy right, in many ways, arguably, Democrats are sort of trying to save Republicans from themselves with some of their demands here. Whether the Republicans are smart enough to take it, whether their president will allow them to take it, that remains another matter, but one we're going to have to talk about on another day. I hope you will join us again as all of this moves forward, because it's A, really confusing, B, unbelievably important to so many people, including, I know, your family, mine, and, 26 million others. Charles Gaba is, you can find his work. He writes as Brain Wrap over at dailycoast.com. You can find him on the Blue Skies at charlesgaba.com. He's also a supporter of Democratic congressional campaigns this year. Right now, you can check out that work at blue26.org. His main website is acasignups.net. Charles Gaba, really appreciate you joining us today. Appreciate your years of great work, and hope to talk to you soon in the future.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we've got to get out, but I'll tell you what, Desi Doyen, Democrats need to get the message out about what this fight is about, and that is not easy given all everything else.
Yes, it is very hard to break the surface of the corporate media right now with everything else.
But they've got a very good case, because a whole lot of Americans are about to be very hurt, I fear, through this process, unless Republicans do the right thing. And as I said, how often does that happen?
True. It's a great time to go ahead and call your representatives and let them know what you want them to do. 202-224-3121 is the Capitol switchboard, and they'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Question is, you know, will Democrats be able to break through all of the noise and, frankly, the right-wing media to explain exactly what they're doing and why?
Yes.
We'll see. All right, we got to get out. My thanks again to Charles Gaba, to Desi Doyen, our producer, and as always, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always a pleasure and an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. We have no paywall, so that is thanks to folks like you who hit a donate button at bradblog.com, or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us remain on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. Always good to hear from you. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.